Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Monday evening here in the DMV. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Jam-packed for sure with the Masters, the NBA coming down, NBA regular season concluding. The weather was great. Not that I was outside too much, but that's a whole other story. And also more talk and thoughts about the upcoming NFL draft. We're going to do that over the next couple of episodes with some people who do this for a living, study the draft, including today's guest, my colleague at The Athletic, Dane Brugler. We spoke at the end of last week about all the things you would imagine regarding Washington's situation with the number two pick, and then some. I tried to ask Dane about some players that I think could be of interest for Washington on day two. So we'll get to that in a moment. Of course, you want to hear Dane's work, and if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you already know that his draft guide, which just came out last week, is preposterously deep in coverage. The amount of details in there, not just like, you know, injuries or did a player run, how they ran a 40 or their high school career, like notes about their family. It is a wild ride, and it's a really helpful one. I know it is for me, and it's not just something that goes beyond, it goes for this year. You can keep the guide. You'll have access to the guide going forward, and then, you know, we'll see if the player somehow lands in Washington one day, or there's talk about some sort of free agent signing. You can take a look and have some really good detail there. Speaking of The Athletic, if you missed it last week, I had a story out. I polled 17 different sources around the league, including active GMs, personnel executives, coaches, and former quarterbacks to get a feel how they see these quarterbacks. So you can go take a look at that. And I don't know if it'll be up on Tuesday morning. I'm hopeful, but I have a new mock draft situation coming out. It's one I've done before. It's not just one scenario. It's not just two scenarios. It's not even just three. Six different mock draft scenarios for the Commanders. Obviously, when you have the second pick and we kind of have a feeling, at least what position it's going to be, it makes it a little bit less easy to do something like this. But when you have all these day two picks, when you have all the needs that they do, and when you have a GM who's willing to trade around the board, meaning me, things can get interesting. So take a look at that. Hopefully, it'll be up by Tuesday. If not, then I presume on Wednesday. All right. Before I get to the Dane part, I wanted to talk about the draft a little bit and just give you some thoughts about what I think is happening elsewhere, or maybe just more importantly, what do I think these teams are looking at? What's the vibe, I think, with some of these teams picking in the top 15? We can get past the Bears. Obviously, it's pretty obvious what they're going to do with Caleb Williams at the first pick, and you know, the Bears have been without a quarterback seemingly my entire life, one of substance, and you know, they're going to have a shot here to make a difference. They've given Caleb Williams a ton of weapons. There's a lot to work with here, and yet, you know, is Matt Eberflus the long-term head coach? Seemed like he was on the bubble last year if they hadn't rallied late in the year. So we'll see what kind of dynamic they have there in that building. Obviously, Washington's at 2-3 with New England. I think the Patriots and Commanders are very similar, right? New head coaches, legitimately new eras for both franchises. Both rosters are kind of messy. I think Washington's is a little better on offense. Defense, the Patriots certainly have an advantage based on what we saw last year. There seems to be more discussion of like Washington making the pick and New England trading the pick. You know, look, I don't know what the Patriots are hoping for. I don't know if they legitimately want one of these guys or the other. So therefore, if hypothetically Jaden Daniels goes two, are they good with Drake May, or is it, you know, the other way around? Are they down with JJ McCarthy? You know, I have made the argument before for Washington that trading down and getting a bunch of picks is arguably the way to go, as long as they don't think one of these quarterbacks is that special. If they do, then you got to make that move. But just to take the quarterback for the sake of taking one, I don't necessarily agree with, especially when you can get a haul like we would perceive that they would. New England's in the same boat, but I would imagine when it comes to it, unless, you know, there's still 10 days to go. When the time comes for my mock draft, I'm imagining I'm giving the Patriots a quarterback. But again, their roster is really bleak, so we'll see what happens there. The Cardinals at four. Now, this is where we have the first team that doesn't have a quarterback, that has a quarterback, but there's still at least one on the board, and therefore could trade down and get a ton of stuff. Now, we saw the Cardinals last year do exactly this. It wasn't for a quarterback. It was for a pass rusher, but they traded down last year to 12 from three and then traded back up to six to then take the offensive tackle that they desired. It's easy to say that they're going to do that again. If you saw the video of their GM having a lot of fun making calls and picks back and forth, and like that was really interesting to watch. That said, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that it's a lot of work, but you know, I don't know what the trade partners will be this year if it's a team that's willing to play along with them in this way. And, you know, at some point, you have to get talent. It's not just enough to have 100 picks. You need talent. And they already have a second first-round pick at 27. I think they stay put and take a receiver. I'm assuming Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State is the answer. Some people, as we get to the end here, are liking Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze more. I'll assume Marvin Harrison, and I'll assume that the Cardinals stay and make that pick, which then brings us to the Chargers at five. So, you know, like a lot of people, it's like, hey, they've got Justin Herbert, but they lost all their receivers. He's got to get some help, right? Well, yes, but my sense is that Jim Harbaugh wants an offensive tackle. He wants a pick that's going to really sort of signify the mindset that this team is going to have. This is also a team that, you know, they just had to make some tough decisions with regards to letting some of these players go. They've got a bunch of holes. It's a new coach. I think for them, getting more picks would be beneficial. Now, sure, they could stay at five and take Joe Alt, the number one tackle out of Notre Dame. But this is a deep class at tackle, as we know. I think trading down to 11 with the Vikings, getting the Vikings 11th pick, the number 23 pick, and then something in the future, I think is the way I would go for the Chargers. So I think, you know, if they stay, I mean, yeah, I could see Alt and I could certainly see a receiver, but unless they just think Alt is so much better than the other guys, I think they're in pretty good position to get, you know, no less than the second or third tackle in this class. So my mindset is the Chargers trade down, but we'll see. Again, there's a lot of talented players there at five. The Giants at six. I know there's been discussion about them moving up for a quarterback or possibly taking one if somebody's there. I just don't know if I see it. This is not a pro Daniel Jones argument, even though I will say that in the past, I still maintain this to an extent, I think Daniel Jones is fine. He's just one of those quarterbacks that needs help. He is not going to be able to raise the boat by himself. And we saw this last year. They lose Saquon Barkley. They lose Andrew Thomas. And those are the two best players on offense. And all of a sudden, things completely fell apart. You know, I think if the Giants don't figure this out, there's probably going to be a bunch of changes in the organization next year. I don't know how drafting a quarterback solves that problem, unless you're convincing management or ownership that, hey, we just got this new guy, and therefore, you know, we've got a plan B if Daniel Jones doesn't work. Instead, I think it makes more sense, assuming they stay at six, to take one of the receivers. They have terrible pass-catching threats, as we know. They desperately need someone like that. So, I, you know, and they've already now, of course, lost Saquon Barkley. So I would go for the receiver, but that would be me. After this year, they can move on from Daniel Jones, but not until then. Seven, Titans. This is one where it's not a ton of conversation, I don't think. They're likely to take Joe Alt if he is there. What happens if he is not there? Good question. You know, they just spent a ton of money in free agency on receiver. I don't know that they're going to take one of the receivers that's left, and yet the tackles have all kind of slid down the board. So maybe if Alt isn't there, maybe they become the team, forget trading up for a quarterback, maybe they're the team that trades up, that somebody says, hey, we want to trade up to get a receiver and jump the Bears at 9. I think that could make sense, but for the most part, as I think I'm in agreement with many that have Joe Alt at 7 to the Titans. 8, the Atlanta Falcons. This is another team to me that I feel like should be, if the Titans take Alt, this is the team I'm looking at to jump in and take whichever receiver is still left. I don't see Atlanta taking another offensive player. Dallas Turner, the pass rusher from Alabama, figures to be the first defensive player off the board, or at least that's the way most people seem to see it. Makes sense. And I do think with Atlanta, they're in a win-now mode as well. Their management talked ownership out of hiring Bill Belichick because that would have changed so much. But if they don't get this done, the owner could be like, hey, we wanted to do something here, but it's not working. So I think the Falcons need to make sure whatever they do is helping them this year, and I think adding that pass rusher would get the job done. The Bears at 9, you know, again, if the board plays out and there's one of the receivers there, everybody's going to have them taking that receiver. And I totally get it, but I also don't. I think receiver is becoming one of the easier positions in the league to fill. Obviously, there's difference makers, and then there's like other guys. But every year, the receiver classes are pretty deep. They already have Keenan Allen and DJ Moore for this year. And even though Allen, I think, only has 1 year left, you know, they still have Moore. That they still have other options that can go back into the draft next year, or they can even take someone this year. I think the Bears need to trade down. They only have 4 picks in this draft. Obviously, we know where one of them is going. They need more bodies, I would say. I don't know their whole depth chart, but I can imagine they need more than just what they have. So they have a first and a second and then, you know, 2 later picks. So to me, I would try to figure out what's the trade I could make here, whether it's to get one of these receivers or maybe somebody wants to jump the Jets and whoever's picking at 11 for a tackle. So I would say the Bears trade down, but if they stay, I guess I would go with the receiver, whether that's Neighbors or Odunze, still sitting there. All right, the Jets at 10. I think this one just really comes down to is how much of a GM is Aaron Rodgers at this point? You know, drafting Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia, would be the fit that would be give them the most juice immediately. Taking an offensive tackle, potentially, that guy doesn't even play this year, except for the fact that their two tackles are older guys they just acquired, including Morgan Moses. They are unreliable to stay healthy for a full season, and you've got to do what you can to obviously help Roger. So taking a tackle short-term, long-term would be the way I would go. Fuaga out of Oregon State, to me, feels like a pick that makes a lot of sense. But again, if Rodgers is running the show, he may very well say, give me that pass-catching tight end. I need that immediate help. So I think that's how I would look at it. I mentioned before a potential trade here for the Chargers to take an offensive tackle. If the Vikings are still on the board at 11, boy, I don't even know if I've contemplated a world where that's the case. I just have been assuming that they make a move. The thing with the Vikings is if the trades aren't there for them for whatever the reason, at picks 11 and 23, they can pretty much get either Penix or Nix. I think if they wait to 23, I'd be stunned if one of them at least isn't there. So they can always do that. They did sign Sam Darnold to a year. I think that was a worthy flyer in the situation that they're in. You know, a 1-year deal, see what he can do with Kevin O'Connell. But again, if we're to believe that they are as interested in getting one of these quarterbacks as has been said the last few weeks, then I think they do make that move to trade up, would be my guess. Denver at 12. This is where the Bo Nix talk starts. I just don't see it. Denver's another team where they don't have a ton of draft picks. Sure, I understand if they want to go Brock Bowers here, but that feels like a bit of a luxury, all things considered. So to me, I wouldn't go that route. I would go with a trade down to get more picks. I wouldn't take Bo Nix, though. I would take Bowers over him. 13, the Las Vegas Raiders, another team in constant quarterback talk. I can see, based on people I talked to for the survey I did, you know, some of them really like Michael Penix. And I can see the Raiders saying, let's go that route. They already do have Gardner Minshew and they have Aiden O'Connell. They can certainly improve on that. I just wonder how much of an improvement is that. If they think it's significant, then you move on and take them here. If not, then, you know, I think going for either an offensive tackle like a Latham at Alabama or take the first cornerback off the board is the move for them. But I'm very curious what they do. We don't talk as much about them trading up as we do the Vikings just because they're further down at 13. But, you know, it's conceivable, I guess, especially if one of the quarterbacks were to slip a little bit. 14, the Saints. This feels like an offensive tackle. Olufoshanu, the kid here from who went to Gonzaga with Caleb Williams, to me would make a lot of sense. He's probably considered the second best left tackle prospect in this draft. He's probably going to need a little bit of time, but from a skill set perspective, he would make sense. Ultimately, the Saints just have too many injuries at their tackle. They have too many concerns at their tackle position because of injuries and poor play. So whereas I might have thought Brock Bowers for them a few weeks ago, I think tackle would be the way for them to go. And then lastly, 15, the Indianapolis Colts. Feels like this could be another spot where they go corner. I don't know if I'm prepared to say this would be the floor for Brock Bowers. I kind of feel like, though, it would be, and it kind of would make sense just because he is potentially such a difference maker at that position, and the Colts don't exactly have killer receivers. Michael Pittman is good, but they don't have like a ton of receiver help, and you got to give Anthony Richardson more weapons to work with. So I feel like this would be the floor for Bowers. Otherwise, a cornerback would be my assumption right now. All right, no assuming what I'm going to do next, and that is get to my conversation with Dane Brugler. Obviously, Dane is one of the go-to guys in the entire draft world, so I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. And make sure you go check out his draft guide on The Athletic as well. Here we go, my conversation with Dane Brugler on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, as I promised, joining us here, the guy you got to talk to this time of year, Dane Brugler, our NFL draft insider who just this week released the unbelievably comprehensive draft guide known as The Beast. Dane's fine. He needs sleep. We don't have to get into any of that. Let's get into this. Quarterbacks, I'm going to do my best to ask you questions you've not been asked 800 times already. That'll be hard. We'll see. Let's start with this. What's been the most surprising part of this cycle for you with the quarterbacks, whether it's learning something about the prospect, the process itself, just any aspect of the quarterbacks that you're looking back going, wow, okay, that one kind of stunned me a little bit.
I think it's the fact that I have been driving the J.J. McCarthy train since the summer. I mean, in my initial top 50 in August, he was a top 20 player. So even before this season, I thought this guy was a first-round pick. But then at some point, he went higher than I had him, which was surprising to me. I thought I was going to be at the highest on J.J. McCarthy all through the process. But then somewhere he became this top 10 pick, which I can't get on board with. I mean, he was my 21st overall player. So it's kind of like how I thought about him in the summer. I still feel about him now. It was just I thought that I would be having to be the one carrying that mantle instead of, oh, all of a sudden he's a top 10 pick now. And I get it. I get why. But I'm surprising that it kind of played out that way. So J.J. McCarthy is one of the biggest wild cards on draft day. Could the Commanders even take him at two? Who knows? You know, it'd be a surprise. That's for sure. But beauty's in the eye of beholder, and all it takes is one team. And so I think it's more likely J.J. McCarthy is the fourth quarterback drafted of this group. But it does feel like it's going to be somewhere in the top 6 to 8 picks.
Isn't that the worst feeling, whether it's like a prospect like this or like a band or a movie, and you're like touting it and you're like, oh, this is
you
mine.
You get one-upped.
Yeah, right, and then all of a sudden everybody else pushes it so far. You're like, oh, wait a minute. Now I have to start being critical? Like, this is too much. I don't like that.
It happens every year with draft prospects because obviously I'm doing this in the summer. I'm doing this all through the year. And so, you know, I love this guy. I love that guy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's a top 10 pick. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I like him, but let's, you know, let's be realistic here, that kind of thing. But you know what? That's everyone should trust their own eyes, you know, and if they really like a player, then trust your eyes. And obviously I like the player too. So I get where you would come to that conclusion, but it's kind of surprising how all that kind of plays out.
Yeah, no, but the McCarthy rise has definitely been fascinating the last few years. But as you're saying, you were already there. It's just that it sped now even past where you were. Yeah. And yeah, we'll see where he goes. All right. You're doing these comprehensive evaluations for all these players. Quarterbacks, I'm sure, maybe even get a little extra attention because of the attention that they get. There's 100 factors that go into this. Athleticism, how their brain works, specific traits, all that stuff. But if you dial it down to one thing, there's one thing that for you, this is what I think matters. This is where if there's like a tie across the board, this for me is a tiebreaker. What's that one thing for you that above and beyond is what matters? And then who is that guy in this class?
Are you talking strictly a quarterback or
just talking in general? Just talking quarterbacks. Okay.
I think it's the ability to it's the quick reaction. Because so much of the position it's happening at lightning speed, and especially in the NFL when everything's just sped up even more, you have to have the quick reaction to make something happen when it's not really going according to plan. And so whether that's improvising or, I mean, obviously that's what, you know, Patrick Mahomes does second nature. And what makes him so great is, you know, he can make all the throws, but when things break down, when he has to move his feet, when he has to move the platform and get outside the pocket and work off schedule, he has no problem doing it because there's no panic to his game. And I think that's why Caleb Williams is going to be the number one overall pick, is because he can do a lot of that as well. I think there's a method to his madness. He's not just him running around out there and trying to create something like he's playing backyard football. There's more method to that madness. But it's also why I think Drake May, in my opinion, is the second best quarterback in this class, because he has some of that quick reaction stuff where whether he's using his legs or, you know, he's adjusting an arm angle or, pushing the ball downfield, he can make those quick reaction plays. And sometimes it backfires. That's the big hang up with Drake May, is some of the reckless decisions. But I would much rather take a chance on a guy that I've seen make those quick reaction plays, as opposed to some of these other quarterbacks that maybe it's just a little bit more of a process and they get there. It just might not be as quick reaction as they need to be, because in the NFL, when everything is just happening so fast, you have to be able to, it's almost like second instinct. It's second nature to you that your brain is automatically going to this as a solution to the problem that's being presented. So yeah, I think that above all, you have to have that quick reaction ability, and Caleb has it. And I think Drake May has it as well.
It's one of those fascinating things where sometimes a prospect tantalizes you with something so outrageous, but then they don't do it consistently yet, whether it's because they're still maturing or just haven't figured out how mm-hmm. to do it consistently. And people get upset about that. I'd rather, like you said, take a shot on a guy who at least showed me he can do it. Because if the ceiling isn't even there, then we're looking at a very different prospect. So yes, ceiling is important. You just hope, as you said, that you can find a way to get that player.
That's why you pay the coaches all that money, right? Get the most out of these guys. And if you've seen him do it once or a couple times, you know he has it in him. You know he can do it. It's just a matter of finding out how to make it a more consistent part of your game. And it's not always promised. Not every player can get there where they make it a more natural part of their game. But again, it's why you have all the coaches on staff. It's why you pay them all that money to make sure you're getting the most out of them. And so, yeah, quarterback is a fickle position, to evaluate, to play, to coach, to everything. And so much goes into it. But give me the guys with the physical ingredients, the mental ingredients, and we'll figure it out. I'll take a swing on those guys all the time. And I think Drake May qualifies.
All right, let me localize this a little bit. Again, it's been pretty quiet with regards to Washington. If you have any insight, I'm definitely curious. But You can look at it a few different ways with what they might do, but they've got Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator. He is a very specific offensive coordinator. Like, you're not bringing him in to do to run somebody else's system. You're bringing him in to do his work. So based on that, how much do you think that's a factor into what it is that they do? And then ultimately, which of these quarterbacks do you think meshes best with how you see a Cliff Kingsbury offense?
Yeah, that plays a part. But obviously, as an offensive coordinator, you do cater to the strengths of your quarterback. And obviously, you're going to run what you want to run, what you feel like is going to give defensive fits. But you're going to adjust slightly to fit your quarterback. And I think you look at the quarterbacks at the top of this draft, and I think all four, you could make an argument, would fit what Kingsbury wants to do. I think it's fascinating with the Commanders, because you have a new regime, new ownership, and we know very hands-on ownership. You know, he will play a part in which quarterback is drafted at number two, a new GM. A GM who's, you know, you look at his background and it's a lot of diverse picks and quarterbacks, and there's not like just one quarterback type of quarterback you could point to. And then you have a defensive head coach who brings a whole different perspective, because he's looking at it through the lens of, okay, who would I least want to prepare for? Right. As a defensive coach, who do I not want to see? And so you could understand why he might think Drake May, maybe Jaden Daniels. So you have this collective front office, and everyone's going to look at this a little bit differently. And so I doubt there's a pure consensus, but that's good. You shouldn't. There should be debate. There should be discussion. But where they land ultimately will be fascinating. And so I do think it's Kingsbury plays a part, just because of, again, that air raid offense and his background and the way he wants to play ball. But I think he does, like most offensive coordinators, they cater to the strengths of their quarterback. And I don't think it'll be any different with whoever the Commanders end up drafting at number two.
Yeah, it is a fascinating the discussion. Is you look at all aspects and where everybody's background is, and I could talk myself into almost any of these quarterbacks. And it is hard to know. And then when, you know, you've got May number two, others obviously have Daniels and whatever, it's hard to narrow this down, but we've got two more weeks to try. Let me ask about anything besides quarterback, just for my own sake. I'm losing my mind over here, Dane, talking only about quarterbacks, as I'm sure you probably are.
I bet, yeah.
They also need other positions, like, for example, offensive tackle. This is considered to be a really strong class. But the top tier or two kind of starts to drop right there at the end of the first round, if we perceive that six, seven, eight of these guys are going to go early. Here's my question. There's also offensive tackles later on day two. Knowing how you see the board and these players, what do you think is the best way for Washington to maximize its value if they want to tackle? Take one at 36 or 40, knowing that, like, even a guy like Jordan Morgan, you have more as a guard. Maybe they see him as a tackle, but he might be like the last one there, but that's assuming they even think he's a tackle. Or wait for day two. They've got pick, or late later in day two, they've got pick 67 and 78. You've got a few tackles in that range. What do you see as the best value for them as a tackle? That early second or later in the third?
Yeah, it's hard to talk about value with this offensive tackle class, because I think they're going to fly off the board. And we're going to see them in the first round, and then even if you have a third round grade on a tackle, there's a good chance he's not available for you in the third round, because he's already off the board. Because a lot of teams need tackle help, and they know this is not a necessarily strong group at the position outside of the first round. And so you don't want to be left without, you know, a game of musical chairs where you're left without a chair when you need your offensive tackle. So won't be surprised if we see a lot of offensive tackles go maybe a little bit before they're graded, or they should be drafted. And so, yeah, if you're sitting there early second round, you know, like Jordan Morgan's interesting, because I know for a fact for some teams, he's a guard. He is a guard on their draft board. They do not see him as a tackle. Now, other teams might see that a little bit differently. He was a true left tackle at Arizona in college, and there's a lot of things that, you know, say he can play the position at the next level. There are some concerns as well, but that's a split opinion from team to team. You know, Patrick Paul from Houston, you know, do the Commanders like him enough to take him early second round? Kingsley Suamatia from BYU, more of a little bit of a project where he's going to need some time. It's not going to be a pure plug and play situation. Is that, are they willing to be patient with a player like that? Roger Rosengarten, who was a left tackle when he got got to Washington. And then when Michael Penix transferred in, they moved him to right tackle, protect the blind side there. You know, does he make sense as early as the early second round? But I do think there's a good chance they might have to go tackle early if they want to make sure they get the guy they want. Because who knows, they might even double up at the position, take one in second round, then turn around, take one in the third round. You can never have too much tackle depth. And I think Commanders are going to find somehow, some way, for somewhere in the top 100 picks. They've got, what, six picks in the top 100?
Yes.
One of those has to be a tackle. So it's just a matter of how they want to attack that. I don't think there's a right way or wrong way, but it will be interesting to see how, what direction they look to go.
Because I know you were viewing Morgan as a potential guard, but, you know, again, I don't know what they think. I did the double up thing in my last Commanders only. I had Morgan at 36, and then I went with, was it Fisher, the Notre Dame kid?
Yep.
Blake Fisher. Late third or something like that. The way to, like, because also for next year for them, Andrew Wiley, we'll see. Maybe he's back, maybe he's not, but eventually they're going to have to get another tackle anyway. So dip in there somewhere. All right, let's go to defensive end edge rusher. I purposely want to bring up Marshawn Nealon because ever since you mentioned, you were the first one I ever saw talk about him several months ago. He's been interesting to me. You have him at number 32 on your board. That is definitely different than what a lot of people do. I'm excited to think you're right. So here's my question. 36, again, they have defensive ends, but they don't have, you know, upside talent. What do you think is the better deal? A guy like Nealon at 36 or on day two, like a Braylon Trice, who is productive at a power conference school in Washington, but you've got him on your board at 82. Washington has picks in that range. What do you see there? Would you rather go Nealon at 36 or Trice at, you know, somewhere late third?
Yeah, give me Nealon. Give me Nealon all day. I think he's, watch the Eastern Michigan tape and he just takes over the game. And I understand it's MAC competition, not necessarily, SEC, Big Ten, Pac-12, not necessarily a top competition, but you look at the body type, you see, okay, 6'3", almost 270 pounds, tested really well, had an outstanding three cone, the 40 was good, the vertical was very good, he's long, 34 and a half inch arms, really heavy hands, he will go at you and at you and at you, has burst, has bend, so there's a lot of things that with Marshawn Nealon that I think are going to translate well, and I think his best football's ahead of him, so, you know, every year we have a surprise in the first round. I wouldn't be shocked if Marshawn Nealon snuck into that first round because he plays the right position. He has the tools. And I think there's a lot of things that point to, you know, him being you're getting him on an upward trajectory. And so I know some teams are excited about that, but yeah, if he's still there in the early second, I like that fit quite a bit because, you know, he's going to come in from day one, be part of the rotation, and then at some point really take it over as being the guy. So Marshawn Nealon's probably on that short list of pass rushers you're considering in the early second.
All right, I like that one. Let's switch to receiver, a position we haven't talked about as much with Washington, partly because they have Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, but they lose Curtis Samuel. I think they could use some size. You have Keon Coleman, the receiver from Florida State, at 37 on your board. Commanders have pick 36. Okay, right there feels like a good range. Where are you at on him, and why is it that, I guess it was when the season ended, it felt like he might be a guy very firmly in the first round, but now it feels like he's maybe not being discussed in that range as much.
Yeah, I think he uses his size and his basketball athleticism to make plays over defensive backs. I mean, the best way to describe it is he big brothers defensive backs routinely because he wins the catch point. And it's a lot of fun to watch. He makes sure quarterbacks don't have to be pinpoint accurate for him to go make a play up in the air. He's not going to create a ton of separation. He's a 4'6" athlete, so the speed is just okay. It's not above average, it's not good, it's not great, it's just okay. Not a ton of separation, but he doesn't need to because he has the size. He's 6'3", 215 pounds. And again, the ball skills just jump out. And watching him run the gauntlet at the combine, I mean, as soon as the ball hit his mitts, stiff. I mean, they weren't going anywhere. And so he's really good catching in stride. The focus, the body control is outstanding. And he's still a young player. He's a third-year junior who has always been a dual-threat guy. He played for Coach Izzo up at Michigan State. Still just 20 years old. And so when he has a chance to really dig in of some of the details of playing the receiver position, I think you can bank on him getting better and better. But yeah, I gave him an early second round grade. And so I think right there in that mix with where the Commanders are picking, if they wanted to add size in this type of receiver, I think it makes a ton of sense.
I know you need to go. Can I squeeze in one more question or you need to go? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You are not only are you doing what you do, you live in the Dallas area somewhere. So presumably you're paying attention.
I'm in Ohio now. I used to be in Dallas. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but congrats on living in Ohio now.
Yeah. That's where I'm from. So, yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, I know you did hang out in Dallas. And obviously, Dallas is Dallas. So I'm sure you have a good feel for Dan Quinn and what his defense is all about. I think that the Commanders need another cornerback somewhere in day two. What's a cornerback do you think? If I tell you Dan Quinn, you think, you know what? This guy works for what I think a Dan Quinn defense would want.
Yeah. I mean, I think. It's funny because 5 years ago you thought one thing and then 3 years ago you think another and now you think maybe something different. I think Dan Quinn has done a nice job of working with different types of corners over the years. You look at his history and he has shown that, you know, in different schemes, whether it's man or zone, cover three. I mean, he has shown that he can be a little, you know, versatile with the guys that he has. But above all, I think, you know, he wants length. He wants guys that are long. And so, you know, TJ Tampa from Iowa State kind of stands out in that early second round range as a guy that has, you know, over 32 inch arms, not the fastest in terms of just a 40-yard dash, but he can play man, can play zone, plays physical, has some ball production, and a guy that you feel like has the ability. So TJ Tampa is one of those guys that stood out as maybe being a fit. You know, if they're looking for more of a nickel, I think Andrew Phillips from Kentucky fits with a lot of what they might be looking for. Not as, doesn't have necessarily the size, but he's a guy that competes. And I think he's, you know, when you watch the film, he plays sticky coverage and he competes. And I think that's going to be music to the ears and to the eyes of a guy like Dan Quinn. So this is a corner class that is it's going to stretch kind of like receiver. You could get one in the first round, but I think you feel great about the guys in the second round, third round, fourth round. The position is going to stretch out a little bit with some pretty good depth of different types of receivers. You might not love everybody in each round, but there's going to be somebody that you like that you think could fit you and what you want to be on defense.
Needless to say, I could ask Dana 800 more questions, but that's why we have the beast available to us now. Like I said, it's you got to have it for the draft, but it extends beyond the draft, right? Because obviously the key is a lot of information that we can use. You know, Washington signed somebody next year. They get a free agent in 3 or 4 years. It's a great guide. I really appreciate the fact that you're here to talk about it. And congrats on being 3 weeks away from getting sleep. You're almost there.
I cannot wait. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Trust me.
Dan, man, I really appreciate it. Good luck with whatever else you got to do here, and we'll keep reading your stuff.
Anytime. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Big thanks to Dane Brugler for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast, checking out my work on The Athletic. More to come this week. It's going to be a very busy week, I promise you that. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time.